friendly reminder, we're taking your calls at 7:30. Talk about your Toronto Maple Leafs. Get your phone charged up and ready to rumble.
Still pissed?
Still pissed.
Maybe optimistic? Either way, we want to hear from you.
We sure do. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or, of course, *590 on your Rogers cell phone.
And since we're asking for that from you, we'll also ask you for Wake and Rake submissions, of course. Last night, a little bit of a Void City scenario, but we didn't lose
it. Hey, you can't lose the Wake and Rake if your selections get voided. Yeah. Imagine that guy, that meme where he's pointing to his forehead and he's like,
We won a Wake and Rake last night.
We sure did. Go us. Before we get Vivek on the phone, Elon Musk is... He's making headlines, to say the least.
Yeah.
I think he's fired everybody that works at Twitter. But
how's he going to run Twitter without employees?
I don't know. He doesn't need it, apparently. Twitter comes out and says they're planning to start charging $20 per month for verification. So you want the little blue check mark?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to pay possibly $20.
I'm going to give up my blue check mark. So fast that your head's going to be spinning. There is no chance.
What a dumb thing.
I will ever pay a cent for anything related to Twitter. There's no chance. Are you going to buy it?
No. You think I care that much about a blue check mark?
The world needs to band together.
To pay $20?
The world needs to band together and not buy the check marks.
Just have none.
No check marks.
Because you're going to look like the biggest
loser. Lawless society.
You're going to look like the biggest loser if you... care that
yeah,
much.
It's going to be a bad look to have the blue check
mark
now.
People are going to ridicule you for paying money to keep a blue check mark.
What?
Who cares?
Oh, God.
It's not like you're losing your followers. You're just losing the little blue check mark. People know who you are. They still follow you.
I mean, I guess it actually works against what it should be, which is like trying to protect people. But now you could just buy the check mark when you're an imposter. Regardless, you know what I mean? It's going to turn Twitter into a lawless society. But I'm not paying into it. There's no chance I'm paying into this lawless society.
No, I would never do it. Our next guest is verified.
He's facing the same decision.
He might be pondering his decision to fork over $20 a month. To keep his blue check mark. And he's our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Vivek Jacob, writer at Raptors.com and CBC Sports, and verified on Twitter. How's it going, Big V?
It's going well. I am absolutely not paying $20 a month, to be clear, for a blue check mark.
$250 a year for a blue check mark is just insanity. Insanity. I'm glad you're on our team.
They don't need more money either. Like, why?
Well, I guess this is why he's rich.
All right, Big V. Huge win last night for the Raptors. Just dominant performance all over. Everybody looked great. The crowd looked great. Lots of fun costumes. It was a big bounce back game. But we saw Scotty start in the point guard spot for the first time here with the Raptors. What'd you make of him moving to the one?
I really enjoyed it. I think, you know, the Raptors going forward have to get him involved at that position even more. I think we've seen from the beginning of this season, there's been a concerted effort to get Fred VanVleet more off the ball and get him playing as a shooter, a catch and shoot guy. And I think we've seen every reason now in this game to ramp that up even more. I think Scotty Barnes was able to take advantage of, obviously at times he was getting matchups on smaller guys. You've got Trae Young in the game, you've got DeJounte Murray in the game. And so I think he was able to take advantage of, you know, some smaller guys on him. But I also think he really ramped up his aggression. I think against Philadelphia, the game that they came out with an extremely flat performance, this was the total opposite. And I think for him to stay in attack mode is so important. He talks about, you know, letting the game come to him, but there's also times where teams are going to give him a jump shot because they don't want him bullying guys. And he's so effective at doing that. He can't lose sight of that. And so I thought that was really encouraging to see that outside of when he was knocking down, you know, those threes, he was taking it inside and creating a lot of problems for Atlanta's defense, forcing them to collapse and then finding shooters.
So this wasn't an example of him just taking Nick Nurse's advice and throwing it in the trash, because we heard Nick Nurse talk about how, hey, we don't want him to settle for threes. He hits three threes in a row to start in the fourth or in the third try, the first quarter, and has a heat check, misses that one. But he was doing everything that Nick Nurse has for, where he's like the dual threat rather than someone who's settling, because that was the criticism of Scottie Barnes, at least heading into the game, from the coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be encouraging that Scottie is shooting over 50% from three so far to start the season. We'll see. You know, you expect that number to come back down. That's not going to be sustainable, but there is a clear improvement in his jump shot. His stroke looks cleaner, and so I think that's an encouraging sign. And you know, one of the big question marks coming into the season was what the Raptors' three-point shooting was going to look like, and we haven't even seen Otto Porter Jr. In the lineup yet, and so I think these are encouraging signs. But you're right, again, the aggressiveness is the key thing with Scottie. You know, he says that, you know, he's consistently looking to just take what the defense gives him. And, you know, if he can knock down enough of these threes, it's going to force defenders to come out at him. You know, we saw in that the first Philadelphia game where P.J. Tucker was disrespecting Pascal Siakam's shot. And guess what? He knocks down those four threes, and then all of a sudden now they have to respect the shot. And so we could see something similar with Scottie, where over the course of the season, if he's making enough of those outside shots, it forces defenders to come up on him. And now he can get those driving lanes and go by people and really wreak havoc.
So in a perfect world, Fred can be at times that off-ball shooter and someone who's not handling the ball at all times and someone who can get his hard defensive minutes alleviated a little bit. But I mean, coming into that game, he's out with a lower back injury. And you've got an immensely talented backcourt with Trae Young, one of the best point guards in the league, and DeJounte Murray coming in. I mean, it's just like you're concerned because you don't have, at least on paper, the type of personnel to deal with one of those guys when you're missing Fred. But with Scottie starting at the one and a lot of other capable defenders, they lock down those two guys. Like, just kind of in layman terms, like how did they do this? How did they do this without Fred? How can they match up with an Atlanta Hawks team with that much talent in the backcourt and make them look at times so ineffective in that game? Like how we understand with the, you know, Project 6ix9ine and all that stuff, but like without Fred, how did they manage to do it?
I think the key was just completely ramping up the ball pressure. And so time after time you saw, whether it was Trae Young, DeJounte Murray getting over half court, and right away, whether it's OG Anunoby, Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam, even just getting right into them and not letting them see any kind of daylight. And so that's the thing with a guy like Trae Young. It's like when he can see the floor, he's going to find a way to make every option a possibility, right? And it's like, okay, if I can see this, I drive here, this is where the space is going to open up, that's where he can do those things. But when you pressure him right from the get-go, you're forcing the ball out of his hands, you're making it harder for him to get it back, and that's what the Raptors did a lot of. And so OG Anunoby was a prime example, right? Just time after time, just poking the ball out, just incessantly not giving them any kind of breathing room. And so what you're doing is, when you're forcing the ball out of their hands and you have that type of ball pressure, you can't throw fastball passes, right? Like everything's thrown on a loop and it's way slower. And then you've got all these other guys who are 6'8", 6'9", with long arms that are going to get their hands on it and then leak out and get your fast break opportunities. The Raptors, we know, are one of the best fast break teams in the league. And so that's how you create problems for those two guys.
Yeah, they had, I don't know, it was like 40 points on fast break opportunities yesterday. They just looked so fast as well down the court. But you mentioned OG, and I think he was a really significant factor to how they shut down someone like a Trae Young, especially last night. It seems like he plays better when he takes less focus on being offensive. Like, he's pressing less and he just focuses on being that defender that is so elite. Do you think that there is a shift where he is able to balance being the offensive guy that maybe we want and that he wants and being this like complete defender? Or are you happy with like the balance that he has currently?
I'm happy with the balance he has currently. I feel like with Scotty Barnes' ascension, and we know what Gary Trent Jr. can do as a scorer, he can take a backseat with the offense. And I think, you know, when we've seen OG at his best offensively, it's because he's playing off of what other guys are doing. And so he's taking those catch and shoot threes. He's, you know, attacking bad closeouts and getting to the basket. He's getting the ball, you know, off a deflection and running down the court for a dunk. And so I think those are the opportunities that are opening up for him. And then one really useful aspect of his offense that we saw a little bit of last season and we saw play out last night was him having post-up opportunities. And again, when you've got a bunch of 6'8", 6'9", the guys on the court, you create these mismatches, and now you're getting smaller guys in the post. And I thought he made some really good passes out of the post. And so that's probably the one area you look at and say, in the half court, he can give that to you. And then everything else can come off of others.
How different do you think that game is without Christian Koloko? It seems like Nick Nurse is relying on him pretty significantly with that rim protection and allowing the OGs to be hyper aggressive when they're guarding guys like Trae Young. Like, is Koloko's presence given Nurse the ability to put his best strategic defensive game out there on the floor?
I think so, absolutely. Obviously, he's a raw rookie and he's going to make mistakes, but I think for those perimeter defenders, and you know, I didn't mention Precious Achiuwa, Chris Boucher as well. They're pivotal to this as well. Precious Achiuwa has talked about how when Chris Boucher is in the game, he feels that license to roam. Guess what? When Christian Koloko is in the game, it's the same thing. And I think all these players, knowing that they have that type of rim protection to, you know, really feast on the ball and really get in there and ramp up that aggression, knowing that if they're beat, they've got someone on the back line who can really intimidate. And you see that every time players go in the paint going up against a Christian Koloko, you're either getting blocked or you're forced into a difficult pass. And so I think for sure that's a great point, that when he's in the game, the perimeter guys really get to ramp up the aggression.
We're speaking with Vivek Jacob, writer at Raptors.com and CBC Sports. We've gone this whole time without really mentioning Pascal Siakam, who has just been the best guy on the court for the last seven games. What have you seen? Like, it's pretty incredible what he's been able to do. MVP chance, obviously, it's a little bit premature maybe to put him in that discussion, but he's putting up numbers. He's putting up consistent, dominant performances. Is this a sustainable Pascal? And what have you liked the most from him?
I mean, it's hard to find something that I haven't liked with Pascal. He is doing everything out there. I think what he talked about coming into this season is being more of a killer on the court, having that mentality when he understands that the game's momentum can swing. And so I think that's the biggest shift I've seen. He at no point is changing his style of play. I think he was someone who almost could be unselfish to a fault, where it's like if he felt like he didn't have it, he would trust other guys and say, okay, you know what, this is not my night, let's move the ball around, let's see who else has it. And now, you know, he's understanding that no matter what, he can't let the defense rest. He can't let the defense think, okay, we don't have to worry about Pascal anymore. And now you constantly have to worry about him. I mean, look at this game. He shoots 8 for 21, which isn't great, but he gets to the free throw line 16 times. He's got the 6 assists, and so he's constantly in attack mode. And that's the thing I love about Pascal Siakam and the way he started this season. The other thing I'll throw in there is the three-point shooting. Well, he is making threes from above the break. Before, when you saw him shoot the ball, it was those corner threes that he could make very effectively. But because of the role he has on this team, most of the looks he's going to get from the outside are from above the break. So for him to be knocking down those shots, that's another thing. Again, I made that PJ Tucker example earlier. When you're knocking down shots from that area of the floor, it makes you pretty much impossible to guard because he is one of the best at finishing around the basket. And he's got that game, you know, that in-between game from 10 to 16 feet, even inside that, to find his shot.
Is he surprising you at all, V? I mean, I don't know if there was a eureka moment. I don't know if something turned. He played really, really well at the end of last year, of course. But it feels like he's thinking the game at a way different level all of a sudden.
Yeah, he is a smarter player for sure. But, I mean, I feel like this has just been a natural progression. I think the only thing that got in the way, and this is completely understandable, was a global pandemic. I mean, every offseason since he's come in the league, we've seen him get better and better and better from, you know, being in the G League to being part of that bench mob to becoming the most improved player and the second leading scorer on the championship team. And then until... you know, they had to go into the bubble. He was playing so well that he still made an all-NBA team, right? And so I think this is the first clean offseason he's had since 2019. Like last year even, he had that shoulder surgery. And right. So for him to have the entire offseason to actually work with and maybe go back a bit to his regular routine, I think, you know, I was expecting a significant jump. I was expecting him to be in contention for, you know, an all-NBA second team. But the surprise maybe is the fact that he is looking very much like an all-NBA first team candidate. And now you're talking about the likes of battling, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, and that is a ceiling changer for the Raptors.
Yeah, he looks like he's in complete control. And again, I don't think it's surprising, and I think you laid out a perfectly good explanation for why it seems like he's just had this incredible start. But it just looks a little bit different in just his demeanor alone. Like, he looks like he understands the game so much more right now. I gotta throw one negative at you. And that's the fact that Fred did have to sit. I mean, we saw some a decent and encouraging byproduct of that with the way that they attacked the Atlanta Hawks. But you'd rather have Fred in the lineup if available. How much of a concern do you think this back injury is?
So I'll be honest with you. I'm actually going to spin this into a positive because last season, well, let's go to Media Day. Media Day, at the start of this season, Fred VanVleet came out and said, because of the playoff push the Raptors were making and how important it was to get the young guys experience and a taste of the postseason, he didn't listen to his body. And that was just detrimental to his health. And we saw at the end that he was just a complete shadow of the player he was. And so I'm happy to see that, you know, there is a bit of a niggle. They don't consider it to be serious. And he took the night off. And so the Raptors are trying to peak in April, hopefully May, and beyond that. And that, to do that, they're going to need Fred VanVleet at his best. And so for me, when I see Fred VanVleet take this night off, he's trusting the depth. He's trusting that they can get it done without him. And he's listening to his body. And so obviously the Raptors need Fred VanVleet to be at his best to reach their ultimate ceiling. But if it means taking a night off here in October, November, December, I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. The longevity is what's important. And look at last night, they were able to steamroll a playoff contending team without their all-star. So it looks like that depth is getting tested and it is achieving what they wanted. Big V, appreciate you joining us this morning and we will chat soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Vivek Jacob, writer at Raptors.com and CBC Sports, and our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I like the spin. You know we're a big positive show here. I don't think you're trying to be negative, but No, I mean, found a way.
It is.
There's promise to this as well.
Our conversations are colored so differently. Like if it's the Leafs, it's mostly negative. If it's the Raptors, it's mostly positive. Try to get at least one thing in there.
I saw a funny tweet that was like, the Raptors are one game above 500, and we're like, hallelujah. If the Leafs were one game above 500, we'd be like, this team is a disaster. I mean, they have different expectations, but I just thought it was funny because it's so true.
And different benefits of the doubt, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you're seven games in and a hard schedule and you're trying to sort things out with not a new roster, but a new collection of talent and new strategies. Yeah, there might be a little bit of growing pain. But when you're the Maple Leafs, who have 10 games against a soft portion of their schedule coming off a 115-point season. Yeah, it's a little different. But what makes it the most different is the vibe around these teams.
Big time.
Lots of positivity around the Raptors. Everyone's feeling good. Halloween parties. 43 Cent. Lots of great things.
43 Cent. I love that.
But with the Leafs.
Look good.
It looks like there's some damaged relationships 10 games in.
There is some damaged relationships. And a reminder, just after the break, we'll be taking your calls. Talk about your Toronto Maple Leafs. Get a heat check on the pulse of Leafs Nation, and that'll be after we take a break, but let's do something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
I didn't want mine.
Yeah, yours is never being played again, okay?
Thank God.
Oh, no, wait one more time.
Yum, yum, yum.
That's it.
Oh,
just terrible, Justin.
My skin is crawling.
Ew.
I just did it.
All right.
I need the Miles Turner voice.
Yeah, you do.
God.
Okay, so Sportico, which is a company that does data information, just publicized a evaluation of NHL teams and how much they're worth. Number one in the NHL are your Toronto Maple Leafs at $2.12 billion in value, followed by the New York Rangers, the Montreal Canadiens, the Chicago Blackhawks, and the Boston Bruins, and the Detroit Red Wings. So basically, the teams that have been around the longest.
The old original six.
All in the top six.
Good investments way back in the 1900s.
Their revenue last season, $276 million. Obviously up from a tough pandemic year of only $94 million. Nonetheless, they are worth the most amount of money. And it's the first time that the average NHL franchise is worth just over $1 billion.
Mm.
So all 32 teams.
What happens if you remove the Arizona Coyotes?
All 32 teams equal $32.4 billion.
Hmm. So the Maple Leafs obviously doing their part, not getting any benefit for, you know, carrying a lot of the load. But two things from this. There have been a lot of reports like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rangers previously were the most valuable.
They were.
Like, we've seen that before where it's Rangers over the Leafs. And you're thinking, like, if both went up for sale, yeah, I get it. It's New York and American dollar, and it would be sold in American dollars anyway. But I always thought the Leafs would sell for more. And then, just in our own city alone, the Raptors are valued at about $2.5 billion. Yeah. I always thought, and no, this is no slight or difference.
Toronto Raptors are...
I always thought that if both were up for sale, if you separated them, the Leafs would sell for more. I still believe that, honestly, but there is a $500 million difference.
The Toronto Raptors, as of October 2022.
So,
yesterday.
There you go.
Forbes.com, who I think I would trust, $3.1 billion.
I think that's Canadian, though.
Yes, it is Canadian.
And then the 2.1 would be American?
I don't have the exchange rate in front of me, sir.
No. I mean, the Maple Leafs are 2.1 based on Sportico, which you laid out here. And then this one is 3.1, but we think it's Canadian, right?
Yeah, it is Canadian because I found another article that says a different amount when I did.
Exactly. So I think it's like $2.47 billion would be the U.S., and I didn't do the math. That's just what I found on mine. I don't know. Do you think there's a $500 million difference between these two franchises?
Yes.
You think the Toronto Raptors are worth more than the Maple Leafs?
No, I think it should be the other way around. The Maple Leafs should be worth more, in my opinion, because they're original six franchise. They've been around for, what was it, their 100th year?
No, just NBA affiliation gives you a lot of value. Like, let's be honest.
Well, the Raptors only ranked 11th in the NBA.
Yeah, which makes probably a decent amount of sense. Big market city. You know, maybe not the most legendary franchise by any means in the NBA, of course. That sounds about right. But even the middle ground is more expensive or more valuable, at least by these metrics, than the most valuable NHL franchise. And I think that all makes sense. But again, if you put these two up solo for auction and anyone could bid on them, I feel like the Maple Leafs would go for a higher.
Important to put it in context, the average revenue of the NBA is $308 million, and the average revenue of the NHL is $192 million. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of more money coming into that league. The average value of an NBA team is pretty close to the NHL standards, but there's teams making so much money.
Yeah, the Raptors belong to a much more lucrative ecosystem, and it obviously helps them. And when you're the Maple Leafs, you're paying for the Arizona Coyotes so that they can play in an arena with 5,000 people. Like, that's part of the responsibility of owning the Maple Leafs. But the Maple Leafs are truly a global brand. That's the big difference.
Yeah, you go anywhere in the world and you could find a Leafs jersey.
And you'll find some Raptors jerseys too.
Yeah, they're spreading. All right, we're going to take a break and we're going to take your calls after the break. Pulse of Leafs Nation. The phone lines are going to open up here. You can reach us at 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. Quick break, and then we'll chat with the loyal listeners on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Off day for the Leafs yesterday. You know what I was wondering? Is all of the other teams had their Halloween parties. Didn't hear a peep about the Maple Leafs having theirs. You saw every costume under the sun, all 32 teams minus one, posted all their fits, but the Maple Leafs didn't, maybe they didn't have one. Maybe it would have been a bad look to have one.
I don't think they've had one yet.
We don't have a Halloween party on November 1st.
Well, the whole week leading up to Halloween, they were on the road. Yeah. And usually it's a girlfriend thing.
There was a whole 2 days in Vegas, remember?
Yeah, but are they going to...
Yes.
What I'm saying is they do Halloween as an organization with the wives and girlfriends. That's the thing,
you don't think,
right?
The wives and girlfriends went to Vegas?
I don't think MLSE sent everyone's wife or girlfriend to Vegas for the week, especially after that loss in Vegas.
So you think there's a potential that they would still have this Halloween party?
I bet you that it was, we got a couple off days here. If they weren't in peril right now, it would probably have been last night.
And we didn't
see
anything.
Maybe they still had it. I don't know. It's not always...
Would that bug you?
...on Halloween, because schedules are schedules.
I feel like it would bug Twitter if you saw Pierre Engvall out in a Joker costume.
Oh, of course it would. Some segments.
I think people would be upset. How dare they enjoy themselves after the performance they put up? We're taking your calls right now at 590-590. Oh, no, we're not. We're taking your calls at 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. Get in the queue. Is it time for the Leafs to make a change behind the bench?
I also want to know if you think there should be a change at general manager. Like, I want people to share their opinion on what really and truly is preventing this team and this core from reaching their goals. Again, it is very early. It's very early. They could turn this around. They did last year. It does feel different, but it does feel... I mean, it's still a possibility that the Maple Leafs capture this thing, grab hold of it, and have the same sort of season that they had last year. It does feel more tenuous.
So we had a situation November 21st, 2019, the day after Mike Babcock was fired and replaced with Sheldon Keefe, Kyle Dubas spoke about this decision to move off.
I have a deep belief in them, and whether that belief is, and I don't have any issue saying that I have that belief in the group and the way that it's built. And I know that that can be used against me if it doesn't go perfectly, but I don't view that as a burden in any stretch. I have a belief in the way that the team is built. Obviously, I'm very biased about that, and that's fine. I've got a deep belief in the character of the group and what they're capable of. I think they've shown enough in stretches throughout of what we can accomplish when we play the way we're absolutely capable of playing, when we're at our best. And what I really asked from them was that this is not an easy time. It's not a perfect time to make a coaching change. We're going to have a pregame skate, a meeting today. We're going to play a game tonight, and we're on the road, and we're on the road for a long stretch here. And what I asked from them was just solely their increased focus, concentration, work ethic, and the ability to be a little bit uncomfortable, because we're going to go through some changes stylistically and with our systems. And it may not look great at times. It may not feel great at times, but in the long run, it's to get the group to play the way that it's absolutely designed to play. And that's really all that we ask from the players. So our goal remains the same. It's to maximize the capability of each individual player, and then as a management group and coaching group, to bring that together to maximize the collective ability of the program.
So that decision back then was to cater the coaching staff and the ideas to the roster. And the biggest difference now, 3 years later, is that everything is catered towards the coaching staff and the roster. Like, this is supposed to be simpatico. They don't have a coach who's trying to undermine the abilities of the general manager like they might have had 3 years ago, when it was clear that Babcock and Dubas weren't on the same page. Now, they're supposed to be on the same page, right? Keefe and Dubas supposed to be on the exact same page because they look at things the same. I don't know for certain if that's the case. The fact that Sheldon Keefe is moving the lineup or moving the pieces in the lineup around so much is illustrative of that, but it doesn't feel as simpatico as it once was, at least for me. And I think it might be desperation. It might be the fact that, hey, you know, we're dealing with injuries here, and maybe we just don't have enough. But it feels like there's a little, like there's feels like there's disconnect in a lot of places in the lineup. And that might also extend to general manager and coach. Anyway, we got some calls.
We do.
We should open it up to
them. The call log is flooding in with listeners that want to chat. George from Woodbridge starts off with, this is a laughable question. A change should have happened last year. How's it going, George?
Hey, yeah, look, it is a laughable question. And one of the things that I don't understand is the MLSC thinks that the Toronto Maple Leaf fans are just unintelligent. We don't see what's going on. Look, everybody saw the writing on the wall. A change should have been done last year. It's the definition of insanity. Over and over again, expecting the same result. I don't even know what to say anymore. This coach was not fit. It was his buddy from the Sioux. I'm not saying we should have kept that Babcock. What I'm saying is there were so many other options we could have went with. He's a rookie coach. You're literally giving the New York Yankees of hockey to a young GM, an unproven coach. This is crazy. I mean, everybody has the right to be upset. Players are not playing for them. They've literally have no motivation. I would have called up Trotz 3 weeks ago and pleaded with him to come over. You know the MLSC, he's got all the money. Throw money at him. I don't care what you do. Bring in a proven coach and a proven GM and actually hold Shanahan accountable for this. Shanahan should have been fired last year. He's had 5 years to do something with this team. So I don't feel sorry for anybody other than the fan.
Well, I'm glad we opened the phone lines, because that was a fantastic call. I want to touch on one thing that you mentioned off the top there, George, which was that, you know, they might feel like Leaf fans and Leaf Nation aren't at the same, like, intellectual level. And one thing that really stuck out for me at last year's end-of-season media scrum was Shanahan and Dubas sort of scoffing at the idea that changes needed to be made, that this wasn't going to work. And listen, arrogance is something that we see in every single industry. There's a level of arrogance for us just to be on the radio that you'd think that people would want to listen to what we're saying on a day-to-day basis. So you need that in your job. But I feel like they do, and they exhibit the fact that they are thinking this game at a higher level than everyone else, when really everyone else is questioning what they're doing right now and if their tactics are going to work. And guess what? Those tactics haven't worked yet. So to suggest that no one else knows what they're talking about is pretty crazy.
Yeah, look, the one thing that I saw in Vancouver is that sometimes trash cans need to be thrown around, threats need to be made. When I hear the president or the GM go into the locker room and say, we've done everything we can from firing coaching staff, firing whoever, scouts, now it's on you. Anything from this point on that doesn't change, we're going to start changing bodies. Now, has Dubas done this? Shanahan, as being an ex-player, has Shanahan gone down there and started throwing trash cans around? We're paying you, all $10 million. What are you doing for us? Has Shanahan sat down with Dubas and said, look, what is your game plan? Where are we heading now? And I need, every time you need to make a decision, it needs to come to me. Like, we need to start holding people accountable. And all I've been hearing is, there's no need for a change, and we're going to get out of this little... Matthews doesn't look the same, doesn't look motivated. Marner's just, he's playing on hockey. You know, all the D, I don't blame the D, because they're just not talented enough. God bless those guys, but you know what? They put in a position to fail from the get-go. We got people being pushed around. Only when Simmons is in the lineup is there any sort of intimidation. I'm sorry, guys and gals. I've had enough. And to be honest with you, I saw this from the beginning of the season. Zero passion, even from management. And I'm hoping you're listening.
Yeah.
Oh. You guys are showing zero passion to fix this team.
All right, George, I really appreciate the call. I do think you make an interesting point that we haven't heard much from Shanahan all season. So whatever's happening behind closed doors, hopefully
trash cans are involved.
There's some passion. Connor from Guelph, you're calling in saying that if we're firing Keefe, we need to fire Dubas too.
Yeah, no, they're both kind of the same entity. You got to, if you're firing one of them, you got to fire both just to show Leafs Nation that, like, that's the problem. Or you got to let it ride with both of them. It's not one or the other. They're literally the same, of the same entity. Like, Keith is Dubé's guy. You got to either let it ride or fire both of them, because I don't think there's a message sent if you just fire one.
Yeah, and it's hard to, like, yeah, they can make that decision. I just don't know where it leaves them this year. I don't know where it leaves them this summer when they're negotiating with Austin Matthews. But it feels like this team needs that change, and I don't know what's going to elicit that change. Will they respond to a coaching change? Probably. You'll get that dead cat bounce at least. Will they respond if Dubas gets fired? I don't really know, and you need a response.
Eddie from Toronto is calling in saying he doesn't like how this team embarrasses the city. How's it going, Eddie?
Not too bad. Thanks for taking my unimportant call. Listen, I'm a Boston Bruins fan. Let's get that out of the way. I got my own problems.
Not right now, you don't.
Well, I have problems for decades. Listen, the Leafs, I don't care who coaches the Leafs. I don't care about the Leafs. What I do care about is this city, and I live and I love this city, and this team takes our city names and crisscrosses North America as an embarrassment to the city of Toronto. Irregardless of the hockey, just the name, the city of Toronto, is now synonymous. When the Blue Jays and the Argonauts, it's synonymous with losing. And this team promotes that type of lifestyle in the locker room, on the ice. It's been doing it for years, stealing money from the public. It is stealing without a gun. That's what it is. Stealing each and every home game money from the public. I don't even want to ask what they pay for. How do those people get into that building? I always wonder that when I watch on TV. How do they get into that building? Thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars later, they want to sit down and watch the Leafs lose on home ice. Like I said, it is an embarrassment to this city, irregardless of who coaches.
Woo, Eddie, guns blazing this morning. But
we wanted fire and we got
there's
it.
There's a lot of passion in the city, and I think a lot of fans probably have to stomach the fact, oh, I'm a Leafs fan. It's tough. And pride in the city is important. Look what the Raptors bring in terms of passion, enthusiasm, fans with a little bit of pep in their step. It's really tough. And it's tough when you feel like you're hitting that wall every single year and nothing's changing.
This is a more common criticism more and more now, which is like, this organization takes for granted that its fan base is going nowhere. It doesn't matter.
You're right.
It doesn't matter how they perform. They are going to keep coming back. And it, despite it making no sense, as was just laid out, we do come back. The fans do come back mm-hmm. because they want to see success so desperately. And I don't think, honestly, it'll ever change. I think you could lose for another 20 years and the fans will still be there. And it's time for that loyalty to be like given back, right? We got to see someone have that someone to care as much as the fans care, right? That's what we just want to see that.
It's a privilege to play in a city where the fans care so much. The Yankees last week complaining that there's too much pressure, that the Leafs, you know, oh, the media, this. You're playing in a city with so much history and passion in their sports. Should reward that with something.
Just looking for the same thing in return.
Bruno from Toronto is tired about people complaining about the core four. This falls on the general manager. How's it going, Bruno?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, up and down, you know, Bruno, you know, it's the beauty of the job, well, but what's your pulse today?
Well, it's a lot of emotion in there, and sometimes you got to separate the emotion from the logic. And the way I see it is there's way too much criticism being heaped on the core four. I mean, these guys have done their job. I mean, I've been a Leaf fan since I was born, and, I, you know, going through the Gilmore years, the Sundin years, and now you look at the players they have. Like, when have the Leafs ever had a guy that wins the Calder Trophy, the Hart Trophy, the Rocket Richard Trophy, the points and the creativity that Marner has? Nylander, everyone complained about his contract, yet now it's one of the best value contracts in the league. Tavares, yes, he's a quiet leader, but, I mean, the guy works his ass off every shift. So you can't complain about those guys. This is hockey. It's a team. It's like Nick Kiprios said yesterday. It's not basketball where you can rely on one or two guys to carry the team. And who's built the team? It's Dubas. And look at all the mistakes he's done. Like, the guy's been a tire fire on the goaltending right from day one. He hasn't got it right. He's tried to bring in toughness, Nick Foligno, Zach Bogosian, Ilya Lyubushkin, and then he hasn't been able to hang on to them. So clearly the guy is not capable on building a team that goes around those core four guys, that brings toughness, that knows how to go through grinding playoff rounds. He keeps switching these guys, these no-name guys on the bottom six, and they just haven't got it done. To me, Dubas and Keefe, and, you know, Keefe's not a bad coach, but he is a first-time coach, and, you know, clearly he's struggling. To me, they got a clean house. And the part that really confuses me is Brendan Shanahan. I don't get how a guy that had the career he did has built a front office with a guy like Kyle Dubas. It's just, those things don't equate to me.
Definitely validity there. The talent loss for this team really is undeniable. If you look at the track records, this team has lost so much good talent that is helping teams across the NHL. And yeah, there's a price to pay for success, even though the Maple Leafs haven't had that much success. You might want a couple of these guys that you've given up on still on your roster right now.
Got a couple more calls here before we have to take a break and talk to Luke Fox. But Daryl from Whippy kind of has a different perspective. The core four needs to be shaken up, and otherwise you're not going to get a different result. How's it going, Daryl?
Hey, good morning, guys. I just wanted to touch on something quick, what Justin said. The only time ever you're going to get as much care as the fans care is when it's stopped being owned by a corporate environment. When you got Bell and Rogers, they don't care regardless if the team wins or loses. They know the seats are going to be filled. You need a sole owner that'll come in that loves hockey to buy the Leafs outright. That's when you're going to see the changes. But what I was touching on with the core four, it's a flawed group. They've been flawed now for 6 years. They've been through too many failures together. And I think the only way you're going to change that is you got to have a big shakeup with a big trade. It's the only way you're going to get anything out of this group. If it keeps remaining the same, you're going to get the same results.
I think there's one more step maybe before that, which is to just put that fear that they could break up in their heads. And one of my thoughts is, if you remove Kyle Dubas, you remove the safety net for those four guys, because Kyle Dubas has promised that they will not be going anywhere as long as he's the general manager. If you are working under that promise, you feel safe in your position. If someone new comes in and says, hey, literally everything is on the table, mm-hmm. maybe you get a response from those four. Maybe you get something different from those four if you at least hint at the possibility of them potentially moving. Because guess what? They've been given all the insurance in the world that they're going to be here.
Okay, let's flip the script here. Ryan from Hamilton is choosing to remain optimistic. He said, what if the team is starting slow, but they can turn things around? Thanks, Ryan, for bringing a little bit of sunshine to our day. Sell us on the fact that this can be a positive outcome.
Yeah, well, you know, the past few years, they've actually started out quite well. You know, Soupy went on quite a run, and things have actually been optimistic at the start. So, you know, being the superstitious guy that I am, and, you know, the curse of the Leafs, all this stuff, who knows, whatever. But what if this slow start is somehow magically what we need? And, you know, maybe they suck for another few weeks, can't pull it together, all this talk keeps on happening. But then maybe they do pull it together, and maybe we do all of a sudden make it to, you know, second, third round. Heaven forbid we make it to the finals. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just always have faith. It's hockey. It's a sport. You know, they can turn it around. I don't think anybody wants to lose. I don't think Austin Matthews wants to lose. What's that going to do for his value if he does take a contract with another team? I don't know. Yeah, just trying to be positive. I think the boys can turn it around. There's always going to be something to talk about, right? But, yeah, I don't know. I think they can do it. Our boys in blue can do it. They can make it happen. Let's keep giving them the benefit of the doubt. And I just wanted to make a quick comment, if I may, about that the Boston fan that called a few calls ago. Irregardless is not a word. It's regardless.
He did say that a few times, yes.
He did. And I had a little laugh at that. So anyway, thanks for letting me sneak that one in there.
No worries, Ryan.
Listen, you know, Leaf fan taking a shot at a Boston fan, that's all well and good. Yeah, I mean, I think there's reason to believe they can turn it around. They literally did it last year. Things started mm-hmm. so brutally last year, and one victory in Chicago in overtime seemed to turn things around, and maybe a little yelling match between Austin Matthews and Justin Hall. Maybe we need that. Maybe we just need someone to call out Justin Hall mid-game. I don't really know, but it does seem different than it did last year. Primarily, I think, because Sheldon Keefe is just at the forefront of all this drama, mm-hmm. and that just screams that there's something else going on.
Our last caller of the day is Daryl from Barrie, who thinks that the core is the same, and if things don't change, then nothing with that core, then there's no there's nothing to change. Daryl, how's it going this morning?
Not bad. How about yourself?
Oh, we're killing it. Happy Tuesday. Okay, Daryl, what's your thought on this core?
Well, honestly, like, if you think about it, over the last few years, things have changed all over the place between, like, Babcock, and we've lost Lula and Morello and all that type of stuff. One thing that stayed the constant has been those four guys. You know, honestly, what you just said there, they have to step up. Someone in that room has to be taking responsibility and ownership on that team and actually be at the forefront and actually turn things around. Firing Keith and firing Babcock and Shanahan and all these guys, yeah, sure, might get things going, but how long is that going to take? Is that going to be instant? Is it going to actually work this time? Because this has happened already before. It's just going to be the same pattern over and over and over again. It's basically insanity on that same type of thing, so...
I mean, there's definitely validity there, because if you make a move, you're likely going to trade the best player. And on the surface, that seems nuts. It seems crazy to give up on the best player at any time, because that's not the way to make a team better. But I think there's also an argument that these pieces just don't fit perfectly. These mm-hmm. core four pieces just don't fit perfectly. Maybe the power dynamic's off. Maybe the personalities are off. Maybe they are not right for this market.
Maybe there's a comfortability in getting paid to show up.
Maybe there's too much comfort. I don't know, but there is something off about this core group, at least in the moment, and there's something that hasn't worked when it matters the most, which is the playoffs. So, again, it's not an easy discussion. It's not an easy solution. If the solution was easy, you know, we would have uncovered it already. Mm-hmm. It's... you know, it's the job for whether it's Shanahan making those calls or those above Shanahan. I'm sure they are, you know, racking their brains, trying to figure out exactly what the next move is. But until that move is clear and obvious, it feels like they're just going to stand pat.
And today, and I think today will be the first time that they'll be addressing the media. I assume there's some skates today, and then obviously tomorrow they're back in action. Humongous return to home ice after a pretty tough road trip playing the Flyers.
I don't think we're going to hear from Dubas. And apparently over the weekend, the traveling media requested Dubas. Mm-hmm. He did not want to come out and speak. We haven't heard from Shanahan in a long time, as you mentioned. Mm-mm. You know, it feels like it's going to be Sheldon Keefe continuing to take the bullets here. Not that they're really bullets, to be honest. But until things change on the ice, it's not going to cool down. It's going to get louder and louder and louder. And the noise, which they probably shouldn't hear inside the room, but are clearly hearing. I mean, Mitch Marner literally said that, will only get louder and more hard, more difficult to ignore. Yeah, the shambles in the brain will become more shambly.
Well, I appreciate everybody calling in. That was great. I think good perspectives, good energy on the text line and in the call log. Appreciate that. We'll do that again and maybe after the next long homestand to see how things are. But I think a good therapy session for many. I like the positivity from Ryan and Hamilton. I think tomorrow's game couldn't be bigger. I think Luke Fox had a great article. If you have a chance to read it, it's up on sportsnet.ca. We're going to talk to him next, see what he takes of all the difficult things to break down. It's not an easy situation, who this falls on, what happens next, and if we do see any action or we just continue to grind this out. That's Luke Fox after the break on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.